All right, if you think of some questions, we'll again give another interval. Let me go to the next part, how to prepare a sermon. There are four stages: conceiving the matter, collecting the data, constructing the sermon, communicating the message. Conceiving the matter, collecting the data, constructing the sermon, communicating the message. Now you who are already used to preaching and teaching may have your own style, and that is perfectly all right. I just tell you what I feel comfortable to do. I often take one-sided papers so that the other side is still can be used. Clip, put one clip, maybe 7-8 pages, I take that. And I may have a subject, whatever is the subject or topic, I feel inspired. How to get inspired, I'll tell you in a couple of minutes. But whatever I feel about that subject, I will write down the heading and then start collecting data. Perhaps I will use a concordance, and as I go through the concordance, the ones I feel are coming out alive to me, I will take all those references so I get some data that are relevant for me. I may look into, perhaps nowadays we can look into internet or my book library and see if anything else has been made available on that subject. So I collect it, just put it across, assort it. It may go through some 4, 5, 6 pages, but it is all haphazard as it come across from whichever source is there. Then, I, having conceived the matter, collecting the data, now I want to construct the sermon. Now I look at those 5 or 6 pages and see, is any pattern emerging out of it? Can I pick up some 2 or 3 key points? And I, you know, pick some 2, 3 key points. And then I take the next paper and write down the key points with some space in between. And then I see which of these verses fit into this section. So I just jot down these there. As soon as I jot down, I strike it out so that it is no longer coming in the way, and so on and so forth. And I rearrange it. Sometimes while I'm rearranging, some new point will come out as a requiring special attention, then I'll just bring it out as point number 3 or point number 4 and put that together. And so I get some kind of points. Then as the points go, I look at each point and see, should I have some continuity of the titles that I've used or the points I've used, and I try to see if I can use some continuity. And so there is a linkage between the first and the second, second and the third, third and fourth. And then sometimes a particular point may be subdivided into A and B or A, B and C, and the second point will be A, B and C, and so I'll divide that if required. And so I make a heading for it. Easy to remember, easy to present, easy for people also to remember and keep my thought focused on that area. So you've got to construct the sermon, and then you've got to put your illustrations and, you know, other things, and then you've got to come across and present the message. So that would be the way you will want to compile it. So I want to now give for you a detailed way how to go about. So let me just take this, how to prepare a sermon. First and foremost, for your picture I have drawn for you how to prepare. So imagine, I've tried to draw, please forgive me for my drawing. Imagine this is ground level and we have dug a pit in the ground and leaving, and as you reach, keep on digging till we reach the bottom, and the bottom is a rock, and therefore you get what is called, you've dug this portion until you have reached the bottom, and that is the rock bottom, and that is where you think of Jesus as our rock on which you're going to construct your message. Now the difference between a motivational speaker outside and us in the church is that our foundation comes from the Lord Jesus Christ, and our authority comes from the scriptures rather than from psychology, rather than from external sources. We can borrow things here and there, but that is only a little bit sprinkling here and there. But our main basis and our construction comes from scripture, and that we should not dilute. We must use the authority of scripture as our basis and be absolutely convinced that the scripture is right. It is the word of God, and it is good for instruction, and it is helpful for training in righteousness. And so we must believe that, and then only we have the authority to communicate the word. You know, God says it, we believe it, and that settles it. But an old saint said, God says it, that settles it whether you believe or not. And so that is the crucial part. God said it, that is the most important part of the whole thing. So you've got to go to the foundational truth of Jesus as our rock. And on this rock, you come across, or you want to think of the aim that you may have, the aim of your teaching. Okay, one truth to be used as our foundation. Now teachers are tempted sometimes to communicate 5 or 6 truths at the same time. Okay, they start by talking on one thing and say, by the way, and so they go a little bit, by the way, and by the way, and they go by the way, and then they forget where they were, and they don't know how to get back to where they were. So there is always a danger on the by the way. So it's good to remain focused on one truth that we want to establish in our teaching. So one truth is crucial. What is that one truth that is there? What do you want to achieve through the sermon? Think of the theme, doctrine, or practice. Think of the need. On your notes, you want to write down the word need. Your church has a need. Suppose you find that there was some project and you took an offering and the offering was very poor. Perhaps the church is always giving in a very poor way. Perhaps they do not understand the issue of generosity. Then you find a need now. You must address the issue of generosity, as generosity being the heart of God, and speak to that. Perhaps you find people are not used to serving, and you find that is an issue that you need to do that. Perhaps people are holding grudges. Perhaps you need to address the subject of forgiveness. So you find what is the need and you meet that need by using scripture and using a message to address that need. You have inspiration, which is the word of the Lord. So inspiration. I may be reading a book and the book may be taking me in a certain direction, but suddenly something arrests my attention and I feel that this is standing loud and clear. I have a diary, and quickly at the back of my diary, I jot down my thought that has come through that and keep it there because I felt inspired. Now, it may be just a momentary inspiration, and when I look at my diary 1 week later, 2 weeks later, when I look at that, it doesn't inspire me. It is flat. And then I feel it just was my figment of my imagination. It didn't have any validity. But if after a week or 15 days when I look at that, and that suddenly still speaks to me, it lays hold of me, I feel God is trying to draw my attention to something. I must labor on this, think of this, develop this, and see what God may want to say that. So I will keep that, and therefore there will be such thoughts which are always kept in my diary. Over a period of time, I will then prepare my message. So inspiration, or the word of the Lord, is important, even as David has spoken now, of a prophetic word that may be uttered and that may stick to you, your spirit, and you want to jot it down because God may stir up something which you want to share with the church. The next word is progressive vision. Progressive vision. Sometimes as a church, we need to know where are we going. And we develop a series. We need to know where are we going. And as pastors, we are always charting a course. And we are here, point A, and we want to go to point B. And how shall you reach from point A to point B? There are some intermittent steps we will be taking. So you chart a course and you take a series of teaching on that particular subject, so you can take it over a period of time. So you take that one aim or one foundational truth and labor on it throughout the whole time. It may be one message, it could be a series of 4 messages or 16 messages, depending on what you feel in God you should do. So far so good. The most important part is aim. I have sometimes labored to find just the inspiration. Monday to Friday I've been working to get inspiration. I'm not getting inspired. And as it comes Friday, then only the inspiration comes. Sometimes it has come on Saturday evening, which is dangerous. So if we can get the inspiration clear in advance, then you can spend more time preparing for it. And so I have now, as I told you, started jotting down well in advance. So I am thoroughly inspired in advance, much in advance, and I can prepare. So I can do a good job preparing. I have adequate time rather than doing it on Saturday night. And it can be seen when Sunday morning that is Saturday night preparation. You can feel it is sometimes shallow. So aim, or our aim or the inspiration is very important. The next most important thing is called the, when you are building a load-bearing building, you first build the door, and that is the introduction. Okay, you build a door first, and a door means an introduction. It means a good takeoff. And if you know anything about aeroplanes, I am told that at the point of takeoff, the engines are at full throttle, absolute. They require the full power for it to take off. And therefore, introduction will require all that you can to get it full throttle so that you can launch out in your subject. Introduction is very crucial. I am told that those who are being trained in TV serials are trained in this way. Imagine that at prime time, maybe 8:30 to 9, there is an excellent TV program on a certain channel. Let us say a channel 6. Excellent program. You know that the viewership of this is running into so many millions. Then at 9 o'clock when the program ends, there is an excellent program on say channel 12. And what is going to happen at 9 o'clock is, people are going to look out for their remote. Before they look out for the remote, they will make a quick dash to maybe get their food or get their sandwich, whatever, or use the bathroom. And then they come back, or they will look out for their remote and then start flicking the channels to go to channel number 12. So before they go from channel 6 to channel 12, the channel 6 would have already launched out into its new program that is starting. And it may take 10, 15, 20 seconds before the man is able to get his remote and switch the channels. And when he gets his remote channel, he has 10, 15, 20 seconds to watch the start of the next program. And what the TV program has been told, please make the start so sensational, so excellent, that the guy, even if he has found his remote and is wanting to change, he says, wait a minute, let me just see, this sounds interesting, this looks interesting. And he hesitates, even though he knows there is going to be a good program on channel 12, he says, let me give it a little more time. And so he is lured or tempted to stay back. So the introduction is most crucial to gain or increase your viewership. And so if on the same footing, if you talk about our churches, your introduction will cause you to either win the crowd or lose the crowd. So if you can win the crowd over by a good introduction, you have got the people with you. And you've got to have a good introduction. You know why? I have noticed with Christians, most often they have a quarrel on Sunday morning. Before they leave the house, something goes wrong. Just before they leave the house, as they're about to leave the house, the child says, Mama, kaka. And already the husband and wife had a fight because they're getting late. And so now you are helpless. You've got no choice but to wait behind. And so already the anxiety level is high. And they're already not talking by the time they come to church. They're thinking various things. Some people have invited somebody or have been invited by somebody for lunch. So they're thinking, well, we have to go there and travel there and so on and so forth. Their mind a little bit distorted. And so, depending on how you begin your introduction, you can get them in. Otherwise, they'll be sitting there and on your handout, they'll be doing doodling something. While they're looking at you, they're drawing something. Or if some child is around, they'll be making their faces to the child that is there. Because they are not with you. They are busy with whatever their world is. So, the introduction is very crucial. This is a very crucial part. The other thing is the time allotment. Time allotment. If you have a 40-minute message, how many minutes will you allot for an introduction? 5 minutes for a 40-minute message? Anybody else? Be bold. 7 to 8 minutes? Anybody else? 2 minutes? 4 minutes? 4 minutes, okay. Anybody else? So there are variations from 2 minutes to about 8 minutes, and actually all are right. But I'll tell you what is the thing. An introduction is only an introduction. It's not your main message. So you can't occupy bulk of your time by your introduction. Some people say, "Main aapke samne aaj do shabd bolna chahta hoon, lekin uske pehle main char shabd kahunga." What they're saying is, I want to say a couple of words to you, but before that I'll say 4 words. As if to say, my introduction is going to be 4 and my main message is only 2 points. And that's the way they divide their timing, which is not the way it should be. An introduction is only an introduction, and a good guideline is 10%. And so, David, your 4 minutes sounds more or less accurate. So 10% is roughly a good guideline. Give or take a little bit here and there. Should be more. If you can manage with lesser time, good, because then you get more time for your main body. But you need to spend some time for introduction so you can get the people together with you. If there are women in your audience, then tell them about your family and children, and if you have grandchildren, tell them about it. Women trust a man if he has got a wife and a children and grandchildren. They feel safe. This man is all right. So tell some stories of your children or your grandchildren, and they like it. And also, become a little tenderized when you tell them stories about your family. You watch it. You find that is always helpful. You also find that, now, just to say, for example, I am in this church a senior pastor. I'm here for 24 years. So people respect me and receive from me. So I may I may not want to, if there is a need, I may straight begin by a firm word or a rebuke if required. If there is something burning in my heart, I can straight tell it and they will take it without misunderstanding me, because I have a relationship, I have worked hard for a fatherhood of mine over their lives, so they will take it from me to a great degree. But that may not be the case if I am invited elsewhere. I have literally no platform or no standing before a new audience. And therefore, I need to be careful when I'm speaking to as a guest speaker to a guest audience. I can only entreat them as I speak. I can only appeal them. I can only appeal to them and bring myself as in a humble way to present my credentials or my points or my introduction to them. And so therefore, I need to take a lower stand to do that. I can never use my fatherly authority over anybody. I would cause suddenly a distance to appear between me and the people over there. I want to say one line, especially for the ATC students. ATC students, you are just starting off new and you are young in age. Therefore, you need to do all the more entreating. Come across as simple or as humble as possible, because you don't use any authority buttons whatsoever. Come in as simple way as possible. That is very crucial as you begin your messages at Deva. This will also apply to any budding teachers, preachers who are in the scenario. I remember years ago, I went to Manipur. Manipur is one of the states on the northeast area, and there are these seven states. Unfortunately, there is a history that these seven states have been given a stepmotherly treatment. And the oppression on these seven states has often come from the mainland of India. Now, I went to a Baptist church and I was a Baptist minister. And therefore, because I was a Baptist minister, they received me well, because they have respect for a Baptist minister. Most of the churches in this Manipur, among the particular tribe that I went to, are Baptist churches. And so there is a rapport that we have. And yet, I came from the mainland India and I was there. And I had to be careful that if they sense me in any sense hostile, because that is their impression of oppression over the last 50 years, I needed to be careful how I go and present myself. I wanted to be very careful. So when I reached there, no sooner I landed at the airport, I was impressed by the people, because they wear extremely colorful clothes, you know, very bright colors. And that itself livens up the whole atmosphere. So I told my wife, isn't it looks very nice, instead of our place which is somewhat with plain and drab, this looks very colorful. So I noticed that. When we went to their house, it was 2 days before the meetings began, and they have an excellent system of hospitality. They serve you and they wait upon you, and they can almost read your mind. If you go near a chair, they can pull the chair, and before you can pull, they only push the chair behind you. They are almost read your mind and then as you're eating your food, and now you think, I want the next serving. They are there with the plate to serve you. And to wash hands, they have a bowl and they get a kind of a big jug and they pour water over you as you wash your hands. And then they also have a towel over their hand and they give you the towel to wipe. Excellent hospitality, beautiful way they wait upon you. And the food, of course, is also very tasty there. And so I happen to notice that. So when I began my talk, the very first talk, I mentioned about the fact that as soon as I landed, I saw the colorful clothes and I was very impressed by it, as it was livened up the whole atmosphere. I mentioned about their hospitality. I mentioned about their attitude of service and their waiting upon us. I did it because I saw it. I was not flattering them. At the same time, I was making it a point to see what way can I build a bridge, that I am not coming as a superior man from another place speaking down to people. I am seeing what I can see in them that I can appreciate and genuinely see some things and care and lift them up, building a bridge so they can receive me, whatever I had said. It so happened that my children were much smaller than 10 or 12 years old, and one of them could play the guitar, and they have their songbook with the script which is in English alphabets. So their songbook is written in English, but it is in their language. So they learned one song in their language because they could read those words in English. And before I could start my message, they asked the children to sing a song. So first song they sang with the guitar in English. And when they sang the second song, the first four lines they sang in English, and the next four lines they sang in their language. And the whole audience kind of just beamed, smiled from year to year, because they felt somebody had just come 2 days back and had taken pains to learn a few of their words. It just built the bridge. It softened the whole atmosphere. So when they sat down and I said my few words, I was straight taken right into their hearts. I got an access to their heart. Now this is important. We must spend some time to work on our introduction properly. Then only we will receive an audience which will listen to us carefully. Are you with me so far? So introduction is very crucial. Keep a humble posture. What your introduction should accomplish? It should immediately capture the interest and the imagination of your hearers. It should immediately capture the interest and the imagination of your hearers. Secondly, it should establish a rapport between you and your audience. It should establish a rapport between you and your audience. Thirdly, it should afford you an acceptance from them. It should afford you an acceptance from them. Fourthly, it should convince them of the importance of your topic and win their careful attention for the remainder of your talk. It should convince them of the importance of your topic and win their careful attention for the remainder of your talk. Now, let me just pause here. I'm going to give you one example, but I will not use it for a new audience. I will only use it for our familiar audience. I would say to them, which is the best book in the world? How many believe Bible is the best book? I expect in the church everyone to raise hands. Oh, I said, good, put your hand down. I said, how many of you have read Bible from cover to cover? And there are some people looking down sheepishly and some hands go up. Already I made them feel guilty. Alright, so that's what it is. Then I say, okay, put your hands down. I said, how many who did not raise hands for the second question but have read other books from cover to cover? Don't raise your hand, I said. So now they are feeling really convicted. So I said, so you believe the Bible is the best book but have not been able to read the Bible from cover to cover but have read other books from cover to cover. Is that right? So obviously, you are having difficulty reading the Bible from cover to cover. You are getting stuck up somewhere in Leviticus or Deuteronomy. You agree with me? So today I'm going to tell you how to read the Bible from cover to cover and enjoy it. Are you ready? I can almost feel the people say, yes, please tell us, because we don't get stuck up. Now, this is the introduction by which I have made them interested in the topic and the importance of the topic, and I have their attention. Now they won't listen. Tell me what is the secret he's going to get. So there should be some such introduction which will help to get the audience with you. So that would be one way. Fifthly, it is not good to open your introduction with an apology. It is not good to open your introduction with an apology. Especially the one that I'm about to give you. Some people give an apology, say, unfortunately, I have not had sufficient time to prepare my sermon and I'm afraid it will not be a very good one. You don't have to tell people, they will know it anyway. The unfortunate people are going to bear through that unfortunate sermon. Their respect for you will go down. They will feel you have abused your platform. And so, if you begin like this, it's a poor representation. This is a sacred platform, as it were, and God has given or committed to you a sacred duty. And so, you've got to do it carefully, thoroughly prepare yourself, give more than what they expect, and then only it will be worthwhile. A good introduction does not promise more than you can deliver. A good introduction does not promise more than you can deliver. Sometimes the preacher may make a most dramatic introduction to his sermon. He excites the audience for what is to come. He promises them a wonderful and enlightening exposition. If his message does not then attend to that level as he has promised, it will be an anticlimax. His audience will be disappointed. They will lose confidence in him and feel little lack of integrity in the man what you are saying. So we got to be careful. We don't want to give a too, do not promise more than we can do. Secondly, it should not be too sensational. It should not be too sensational. Sometimes a preacher can take out from his pocket one dagger. Are you ready to die? Okay. Are you ready to meet your Savior now if you die? So that will be too sensational. The man may perhaps have a heart attack right away. So let not the introduction be too sensational. That is important. C, should not be too long. Should not be too long. Remember, this is only your introduction, not the sermon. D, should be carefully prepared. Should be carefully prepared. Provide a natural transition into your theme. Provide a natural transition into your theme. When properly presented, it should not be obvious to your listeners just when the introduction concluded and the sermon began. It should just naturally flow from our spirit. Alright, we come to the next one, and that is the what is known as the body of the message. As you speak line upon line, word upon word, text upon text, here a word, there a word, and as you do that, you build it brick by brick, and then as you do that, then you come what is known as the main body or your content. Main body or your content. Brick by brick layer. Systematic, natural, logical, smooth progression with clear point. Systematic, natural, logical, smooth progression, clear point. Generally, 3 or 4 points, not 21 points. Alright? 3 or 4 points. Prepare a rough plan first and then improvise. Prepare a rough plan first, then improvise. You could use what is known as an acronym. The word acronym means you use certain alphabets which makes a word and use that same alphabet for your point. I remember one brother in our church at Kulaba here once gave a message on how to overcome temptation. How to overcome temptation. And he wrote on the board in a vertical way, face it. Face it. And then with the word F, he wrote flee. And then he wrote one reference, 2 Timothy 2:22. Flee youthful lust. And then he wrote, as he wrote A, avoid. C, confront. E, encounter. I, intercede. And T, thanksgiving. So he used that beautiful acronym, face it, and then made it so beautifully well with how to overcome temptation. So that's a good way to do it if you are preparing a message. People can remember it as I have now remembered it as he has spoken it then. Somebody else spoke it, not my message. I heard some years ago, Billy Graham came on the television and he gave a message on the Christmas Eve. And he spoke about Christmas. It was a Christmas message and he says the Christmas story starts with the cradle. And then he says, but the cradle was always in the shadow of the cross. And the cross is not the end of the Christmas story, but it ends in a crown. And then he gave a call for commitment. So Christmas C, cradle C, cross C, crown C, and commitment C. So he made it on the same alphabet. You could use an acronym or you could use the same alphabet. Some of you have attended my sessions on marriage seminar. I also use 3 C's, about commitment, about companionship, and about communication. And then under each of those, I use attitudes, be attitudes, be loving, be submissive, be understanding, be together, be married, be honest, be forgiving, and so on and so forth. So it's easy to remember as you take a common alphabet. And people also will remember when they go home. If they have forgotten, they get a hint through that same C or same alphabet or through the acronym. They can immediately work out what was that, what was that, and they can get it quickly. So you can use that in your main body of the message. For this, you should use what is known as thesaurus. Am I right? The word? Thesaurus? Okay, thesaurus. Thank you. So you could use a thesaurus and that gives you different words for the same one so that you can get those words on the same alphabet or something. Okay? Use Bible references moderately. At times read it. At times just quote. At times make people read it with you. And you could have headings. Main heading 1, 2, 3 and subheadings A, B, C. I suppose for every one major point you could use one or maybe two Bible references. Not 12 or 14 Bible references. That will be too much for them to digest. It will consume also a lot of time. A couple of references for each point will be there. So message with 3 points, I may think about 6 to 8 references would be more than enough. Next one is illustration. What do illustrations do? As windows, they shed light in the house. Alright? Windows bring light in the house, so do illustrations. They bring light in the house. Now, illustrations are very important. Otherwise, if you only rely on words, you could land up into problem. How many of you know cricket? How many know cricket? Just raise your hand. A good number. Now, imagine there is someone who does not know cricket. And somebody is trying to explain to them what cricket is. Listen to what he says. Using words to communicate, explain cricket to a novice. The game of cricket, as explained to a novice, a foreign visitor. You have 2 sides, one out in the field and one in. Each man that's in, the side that's in, goes out, and when he's out, he comes in, and the next man goes in until he's out. When they're all out, the side that's out comes in, and the side that's in goes out, and tries to those coming in out. Sometimes you get men still in and not out. When both sides have been in and out, including the not outs, that's the end of the game. How's that? Now, I'm afraid sometimes Sunday morning messages are exactly like that. The guy who's teaching knows what he's saying, but the guys who are listening, they're not understood what is in, what is out, and who's out. They are willing to go out as quickly as possible. So, if there are illustrations, it are very helpful for the audience. Illustrations are very crucial. If you don't know how to get illustrations, you can go onto the internet, and there is an internet site called sermonillustrations.com. www.sermonillustrations.com. One long word, and you can get, as soon as you go on their site, you'll get all alphabets. Then you click on one alphabet, say you click on H, then you'll get all the headings under H. H maybe have humility or honesty or whatever. Then you click on honesty, then you'll get under honesty 5 or 6, some illustration. Then you can see which one suits your story, and then you can do that. Okay. Windows are like illustration like windows. Illustrations shed light on the subject. Suspense is crucial. Now, if at all you're telling a story, I know the story or illustration will always have a suspense. The last line is the most important. Some people tell you in advance what is the last line. They have not practiced how to give the illustrations properly. The last line is the real punchline. And if necessary, you should write down that last line, because you don't want to miss that last line. The punchline, if you miss the last line, sometimes people tell the whole story and forget the last line. That's terrible. People feel, what was that last line? They don't know. They are left. And then when you go on preaching, they are left behind for the last line. What might be the last line? So don't do that. Write down the last line. If you are good in giving illustration, you may not want to write down. But I suggest, even when you know it, it's good to write down. Because you never know when you suddenly get a blank moment. You do get sometimes blank moment, don't you? Like a preacher was there, and he says he was taking a wedding sermon, and he was a brand new preacher. He was his first wedding. And as he was about to start, he went blank. Completely blank. He didn't know what he was to say next. And the only thing he remembered was his teacher had told him in the Bible school that when you forget, think of a Bible verse and just quote the Bible verse. Just quote a Bible verse. And so as he stood before the couple about to start his message, he did not know anything. He remembered the Bible verse. Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they want to do. So it's better to write down, otherwise we will make blunders in our this thing. So that is helpful. Helps explain the message easily. Suspense is crucial. Helps explain the message easily. It will interest the mind and secure the attention of your hearers. It will interest the mind and secure the attention of our hearers. As I said, some may have quarreled before coming to church, and a sleepy congregation is no congregation. It renders our preaching lifelike and vivid. It renders our preaching lifelike and vivid. They are like windows that open the light of the truth. Helpful to explain doctrine, concepts, duties where understanding is low. Helpful to explain doctrine, concept, duties where understanding is low. If you have read any book by a man called Paul White, who writes Jungle Doctor stories, excellent stories. And they, take the truth beautifully well. Illustrations, stories really help. Anecdotes really help to get across a point. Even difficult things like Trinity. If you want to explain Trinity to children, three persons, one Godhead. But you say, have you seen a stool which has got three legs? There are three legs, but there is one stool. And the children can grasp that concept. Trinity is something like this. There is one God, but three persons. So then they can follow it very easily. So you can teach even a complicated truth which adults have a difficult understanding. You can teach it to the children if you use a suitable illustration. So illustrations are very crucial. Next is, there's a kind of reasoning that is very clear to the illogical mind. There's a kind of reasoning that is a very clear to illogical mind. Truthful anecdotes are stubborn facts. They help memory to grasp the truth. They help memory to grasp the truth. Memory is actually a chemical substance. So when you try to memorize it, it gets rearranged in a particular way, in a certain chemical arrangement. That is how you can remember by memory. It is a chemical substance. So these illustrations are very helpful. Do you know that after a Sunday morning message, after a Sunday morning service, when a family has gone home, and say that day the mother could not come to the church service, and as they are having their meal, the mother asks, how was the service in the morning? And they say, whatever, good. And then they say, what did the preacher say? It's a good message. What did he say? And then all look at each other, what did he say? By the time they have forgotten. The only way they'll remember first is if you have told any story, they'll remember the story first. And from the story, she will say, but what was the point? And then you will have to tell the point. From the point, they will tell the title, and from the title, the main heading of that morning message. So it is usually the illustration that people remember, and then the main sermon. They will not remember just the bland sermon. They need to have some illustration, some anecdote, some stories. Those are very well remembered. The power of illustration is extremely helpful. Some of you know of the Indian story called the Panchatantra. Panchatantra, the philosophy of Panchatantra is this. A certain king had certain sons who were very notorious and naughty and would not learn, would not sit down to learn from their teachers. And whichever teacher came, they harassed the teacher so much that the teacher quit. And the king knew that all teachers were running away, so he offered a big prize if anyone would come and teach his children. And then one day a teacher came, and as soon as he came, the children were planning how to get rid of this fellow. And he said to them, listen, I have not come to teach you, because if I teach you, my state will be like the state of the crow. And they said, what about the crow? He said, you don't know about crow. No, there was a certain crow, and he told them the story of a crow. And so whenever his children all with rapt attention listen to the story of the crow, where he drew the moral by the end of it, and by the time he concluded the moral, he says, and so this would happen to the crow, but if he's not very careful, his state could be like that of the squirrel. And they said, what about a squirrel? And so he went on to tell the squirrel. And the Panchatantra is nothing but a series of stories filled with a moral truth by which the children sat with glued attention, and he managed to give them education without being thrown out, because by the power of illustration, it helped the children. Now I know that children have limited attention span, so you got to tell them story to keep them interested. But I also know that adults also have limited attention span. So stories are helpful even for adult people. The 1001 Arabian Nights also has the same philosophy, where a certain, whoever, an Arab sheikh said, somebody can be a queen for 24 hours. She can be a queen, she will marry me, she will be crowned as a queen, she will live for 20 hours, she will sleep with me in the night, but the next day morning I will behead her. Who was willing? And many women came forward, enjoyed being a queen for 24 hours, in the morning they were beheaded. And then there was no one willing to be a queen, until one lady said she was willing to be a queen, and she became a queen. And that night before going to sleep, she told him a story. And as she told him a story, she left it halfway. She only told episode 1. And he said, what is the night? She said, I'm feeling sleepy, I'll tell you later on. So she fell asleep. So in the morning when he woke up, he remembered that episode 1. He says, I'll kill her tomorrow. Let me hear the story tonight. And so she told episode 2. She didn't finish it. And so 1001 Arabian Nights is 1001 stories that this lady told, until by the 1001, that means nearly 3 years or so, he fell in love with her and said, now I don't want to kill you. I like your stories very much. And so both the idea behind this is the idea of illustrations or stories or anecdotes are so crucial in getting a truth across. And sometimes you don't have a lot of time. All you can tell is one story, and that is the truth that can get across to your people, which we'll look into in a couple of minutes. So they help memory to grasp the truth. Are useful, they frequently arouse feeling. Are useful, they frequently arouse feeling. Some people are rich through their heart rather than the mind. And God's scripture is full of anecdotes. And one of the best storytellers was Jesus himself, as he told through 29 parables, each one as beautiful as ever. And the beauty of parables as compared to the stories of Panchatantra is this. In the Panchatantra, you have to imagine a crow talking to a fox, and a fox talking to a crow. Requires a little bit extra imagination. But the parables are real life situation which may have really happened right before your eyes. And therefore there is a reality behind the important heavenly divine truth that Jesus speaks about. You don't need to stretch your imagination too much. Therefore the parables are more powerful than even the stories of Panchatantra. Good as the stories of Panchatantra they are. Let me give you a couple of stories before we break for a cup of tea. Alright? Now, so again, those who are familiar with my teaching already know this story. Forgive me if I'm repeating it, but it drives home the point what I want to say. Years before, I went to Andheri, where some of you know a guy from Campus Crusade called John Esteves lived. And John Esteves, I went to see him, and then I was going to leave, and he said, would you like to watch a film? And normally my mind says a film will be 1 hour, 2 hours, or 2.5 hours. I said, no, I don't have time, I need to go. He says, no, this film is only 10 minutes. I said, sure, I'm happy to see a 10. So he put up his projector, and he showed me a film. It was called The Bridge. And the story in this bridge was shown that a certain railway company wanted to build a bridge over a water canal. And in this water canal or this water channel, huge ships used to go past. And so, in order for the ships to go past, if they had to build a railway track, they would have to build a very huge bridge. Instead, they came upon another idea, and that is they built a barge on which was a floating bridge. The railway track was laid across on the land, and railway track was laid across the other land, but between where the canal was, there was a barge on which there was a piece of the railway track, which if certain buttons were pressed, this barge would come into place, make the connection at both the sides, and then the train could pass through. The train was only one train in the day, and so they did this next to this canal. They built a house for an operator to operate this particular barge. They built a small tower next to this waterway, and they let a man live there. He lived with his wife and a 5 or 6 year old son. And they show the movie starts with this man who is playing with his son and is walking through an orchard where he's placed his son on his shoulders, and the son is reaching out to some fruits and they're eating the fruits. And the son and the father are showing in a very good bonding that they have. And the father is enjoying the son is enjoying the company of his father. Then they go to the backyard, and then the father shows him how to plant seeds. They have got a box containing big seeds, and the father digs a hole, plants the seed, covers it up, measures with his span, then digs another hole, plants another seed. And the son also begins to do that. And the father's wristwatch begins to give a beep sound. So he says, son, it's time for the train to come. I must go to the tower. You continue planting the seeds. And so the boy continues planting the seed. And the man goes up the tower, climbs up the tower, and presses buttons. And as he presses button, the whole barge comes into place, engages itself on both the sides, and on the tower, the signals go. There are indicator bulbs which grow from red to green. And no sooner they go from red to green, just next to this water canal, there is a signal which also goes from red to green. And a few miles ahead, there's another signal which also goes from red to green. And far away they are shown a train coming at full speed. The driver is keeping his eyes on the railway track and the signals, and the people are shown in the train, some sleeping, some reading the newspaper, some reading the magazine, some looking out, stewards and stewardesses walking up and down the aisle serving them refreshments, and the train is coming at full speed. And as this man presses the signals go from red to green, everything is engaged. But within a few seconds, it comes back from green to red. And so he presses the buttons again, and they go from red to green. But again it jumps back to red. He tries to do this 4 or 5 times, but it would not go back to green. It seems to get stuck up somewhere. So this man, from this water canal, near this tower, is a railway track. He gets down the tower, comes on the railway track, crosses the railway tracks, and comes to the other end, and finds there is a loose connection. And so he takes a crowbar, stands on the side of the track, and puts the crowbar in place. Immediately the railway tracks engage and the connection is made, and he can see the signal goes from red to green. Supposedly the other signal also would go from it, and the other signal also goes from red to green. And the driver who is watching, is coming at full speed, watches it green and therefore continues at full speed onto this railway track. Meantime the scene changed and they show this boy, this 5-6 year old boy, is planting seed, measuring it, sweetly planting seeds. And just then he can hear his mother call out from the kitchen window and calls out in the name of the father. And so the boy is planting the seeds and hears the mother call out to the father, but knows the father has gone to the tower, so he drops his seed and he runs to the tower, climbs up the tower and says, "Daddy, Daddy." But when he reaches the tower, he cannot see his daddy. But from the window, he sees down the railway track, across the water canal, he sees his dad sitting there on the other side. So he climbs down the tower, he comes right across the railway track and starts running on the railway track over the barge and shouts, "Daddy, Daddy." At that very time, they show the train has come quite close and is at full speed. And the man who's sitting there waiting for the train to come on the side of the railway track with a scroll bar in his hand and the connection man suddenly hears, "Daddy, Daddy," and he looks to his left and he's horrified to see his son running on the railway track at full speed, but he's right in the middle of the barge. And when he sees his son in the middle of the barge, he gets stunned and he stands up, and as he stands up, the crowbar comes in his hand, the railway track gets disengaged, and the train is just a few hundred yards away, throttling at full speed in this direction. And so next side he looks and he sees the train coming, and then he looks at this side and the son innocently running at full speed saying, "Daddy, Daddy." 5-6 year old, sweet looking, chubby face that is being shown. And as soon as he sees that, this man's whole face breaks out into severe perspiration. He looks left and he sees his son. He looks right and he sees the train. And he has got few seconds to make a choice. What choice will he make? Will he let the railway track be separate, in which case the train will go hurtling down the water canal and perhaps most of the people will perish? But he makes the connection, then he'll be responsible for that very train to go over his own son. There is not enough time to rescue the son. There is not enough time to stop the train. It is too close at too fast a speed. There is no time to call up someone and ask for prayer help. It is the time for next 2, 3, 4 seconds to take a decision, and he's taken. And all they showed on the screen was the man looking left and the man looking right and the man looking left and the man looking right. And as I sat there and I watched, my heart raced at full speed because I could understand what a precarious situation he was in. He had to choose between two very difficult evil choices, as it were. And it is very difficult for anyone to choose either this or that. It is extremely difficult. And the train was coming at full speed, very close. And as it came very close, I wanted to know what the man would choose. And the man took the crowbar, put it in the railway track, and made the connection as the train hurled past him at full speed as he kept his eyes closed. And on the screen came these words, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him will not perish but will have eternal life." And with that, the movie ended. Now, here was an illustration of a bridge which told you exactly whatever I said as way to say illustration. Now, this illustration is very powerful, very real, very penetrating. In fact, it is a gospel message of its own. And if you have only 5 minutes to give a message, you just give the illustration as the gospel message. It is adequate. I've used it so many times at so many places and it has always worked. It is a very powerful illustration. Notice the following things of this illustration. I don't know whether you noticed, but as I began narrating the story, I began at this pace, as I was speaking at this pace, but as I began to progress, as I came towards the part where the tension was mounting, I slowed my pace. I let it sink into your heart as I build the tension up, as I build the situation up. I did not tell you what was the answer. I kept the suspense till the end. What is he going to do? Is he going to make it or is he going to let it go? Kept the suspense on. The suspense is important. And as the suspense got disclosed, I also gave you the main point by giving the Bible verse, "For God so loved the world," by which I suppose the hearts have been emotionally adequately opened for each the words to go deep down in your hearts. Are you with me so far? So an illustration should be used adequately, powerfully, correctly. The pace at which you say certain words at a certain speed are very important for it to say that. If I had said it very hurriedly at the wrong time, it would not have the desired effect in the hearts of people. We need to ensure that we use them at the right way. Okay, with that we will just stop here. Before we go to the visual aid portion, let's have a cup of tea. Let's make an interval for about 10 minutes, and I'll give you a call if you can come back. And feel free to move around.